And welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on the Premier League as we will analyze the North London derby, Arsenal against Tottenham Hotspur. My name is Erik Elias. With me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Jose Perez. Jose, welcome.
Hello, Erik, and hello, everyone. I'm very happy to be here reviewing what is the biggest clash of mid-table teams in Europe.
Yeah. I think for both set of fans, it's been rough seasons, the past two seasons. I think Spurs fans will definitely think back on those Pochettino years. And I think Arsenal fans will definitely, think about what they said about Emery and about what he did if they look at the way their team is playing now.
So the case of both Arsenal and Tottenham is kind of funny in all senses, like historically, tactically, and everything. Like a few... In the past, it was Arsenal making fun of Tottenham. Oh, you're the mid-table team. Then it was Tottenham making fun of Arsenal. Well, you're the mid-table team. Now they're both mid-table teams. And for different reasons, because Spurs right now under Mourinho have a lot of punch, like up front. So they are pretty effective in the boxes, but they don't play well as a team. Meanwhile, Arsenal under Arteta, I think they play actually quite nicely as a team. Good possession play, press, counter press nicely, but they are not as effective in the boxes. So they cannot capitalize on a lot of like the good collective play that they have. So that's kind of the contrasting stories of Spurs and Arsenal right now. Yeah. One team has what the other one lacks.
If we do very basic analysis, these teams are both deservedly outside of the top six in England. It's not like they are getting unlucky in both boxes or something. The overall statistics reflect on how they perform.
Absolutely. If we look, for example, their expected goal differences, both of them are outside the top six. And on the table, they are outside the top six. So it's well-deserved, well-earned.
Yeah, that's very basic stuff. I'm not saying expected goal is the end of all analysis, but if you look at some games and look at some other stats, yeah, It's a mid-table clash we're looking at, but still one that deserves a good analysis. So let's dive into that. Lineups, you take Arsenal?
Yes. So we're going to talk about the case of Arsenal. As I said, they are actually playing well collectively, just not effective in the boxes to capitalize. This is kind of the Arsenal of Bukayo Saka now. Like he is being one of Arsenal's most important offensive players, like in both scoring and assisting. Going into this game, right now Arsenal have like no injuries really, which it's so weird to say that a team has no injuries in Corona times, but they did have a significant absence. So Aubameyang was out due to what was a disciplinary issue, according to Dave Ornstein, the top news source for Arsenal. He was late to a match day meeting. It wasn't the first time that happened, so out he goes. So this leads to the following lineup then. The goalie was Ben Bleno as usual. The center backs, David Luiz and Gabriel Dos Santos, that I thought looked kind of solid this time around. Fullbacks, Cedric at right back instead of Hector Bellerin, and Kieran Tierney on the left back. Big game for him. The double pivot, Granit Xhaka more on the left side, Thomas Partey more on the right side. The number 10, Martin Ødegaard, who did something more than what's the usual number 10 role these days. We're going to talk a bit more about that later. And then the front three were Emil Smith-Rowe on the left, Saka on the right, and Lacazette replacing Aubameyang as the striker.
Yeah, and I think normally it would have been Aubameyang on the left and then Smith-Rowe on the bench, but it turned out pretty well for them. And Jose, I know you are a big Ødegaard fan, as a La Liga fan and of course a Real Madrid fan. So I know you were not too enthusiastic about Arsenal Spurs, but at least you got to look at Ødegaard.
Yes, I have to admit that the first time I was looking at the game, because we always talk about these things with Omarvin from Managing Madrid, like I was super harsh on his game when I was watching it. And then looking at the numbers afterwards, I thought, maybe I was a bit too harsh. Like it was better than what I thought just from the eye test. I still don't think he's playing at his best, but he still had a lot of impact. And I think right now Arteta is giving him a pretty important role in the team, which we'll discuss later.
Yeah, let's not turn it into an Ødegaard podcast, but I think it's a loan for Madrid, right? It's not a loan and buy. I think it's only a loan.
Yes, but the circumstances are complicated. Who knows? At this point, I'm not sure I see Odegaard playing for Real Madrid again as long as Zidane is still coaching them.
Sure. So Spurs 4-2-3-1, but yeah, basically in these big games, it always turns into a 4-4-2 with a deep block, and they did a lot of defending in this match as well. So I will refer to it as 4-2-3-1, but it basically was a 4-4-2. Lloris in goal, obviously. Center backs, Davinson Sanchez, former Ajax player, and Toby Alderweireld, former Ajax player. Then the fullbacks, interesting for me because two fullbacks with a basically more attacking than defending profile, with Sergio Reguilón and Matt Doherty on the right, Reguilón, of course, on the left, who both at their former clubs excelled more for their attacking reasons instead of defense. Double pivot in midfield, central midfield duo of Højbjerg and Tanguy and Ndombele. And the three guys behind the striker, Sonny on the left, Heung-min Son, Lucas Moura on the center, who's now, according to Mourinho, basically a number 10. He's been playing there a lot in this season. And Gareth Bale on the right. So big surprise if you would have told that 2 months ago, but that's now the starting right winger. And one of their midfield omissions was, of course, Lo Celso, who was injured again. And the striker, of course, Captain Harry Kane. So yeah, of course, 4-2-3-1. We'll talk a bit about those profiles more later on. But first, let's start with the game. What did we see, Jose, in the opening stages?
Yes, so in the opening stages, and this is something that I think you pointed out to me pretty well, was that it would have seemed that Spurs were trying to make Arsenal play a bit more on the right side, and that, and who knows, like I like your theory that at first the intent was to make Arsenal play more on the right side so that Son can counterattack on the left side. So what did you think about that?
Yeah, I think maybe I'm looking too much into this, but I've noticed earlier that Mourinho tries to create the space for Son, and believe it or not, Gareth Bale on the right, I think he's at a good level, better than I thought he was, but physically he has deteriorated a lot, not only compared to his Tottenham years earlier, but compared to his Madrid years. So I think he does good stuff, Bale, but the most prominent counter-attacking outlet, of course, is still Son. So I thought Spurs were trying to create that space on Tottenham's left side and Arsenal's right side. So whenever Arsenal tried to build up on the left, Spurs did some pressing. Whereas if they build up on the right, Spurs kind of let it go.
Yeah, and that's a good point because it will take me actually to my next point about Arsenal. But before that, I also like that you mentioned the thing about Bale. Like something that's important, like if you follow mostly Premier League and maybe not La Liga, it's important to understand that Gareth Bale 2021 is not run into space for 50 meters, Gareth Bale. It's ball to the feet, Gareth Bale. Right now, Gareth Bale is kind of a playmaking winger from the right. He is not a guy who runs very aggressively. So, and actually, ultimately what led to the Spurs goal, for example, came from a pretty nice long ball from Bale. So he's more of a playmaker now, and it's important rather than a counter-attacking asset, and that's good to remember. Going into what you mentioned about Spurs pressing a bit more on Arsenal's left side, that's actually good to remember because it leads to what was probably the most important tactical aspect of the game, which is Arsenal's left side and the systemic advantage Arsenal had when attacking through the left. So this is something we're going to talk about because I think Bale and especially Doherty got a lot of flack for what was happening in the game, but especially in the case of Doherty, I don't think he was at fault. He was just in a situation where he had a consistent 2-1 from Tierney and Smith Rowe. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Doherty at Wolves, when they still played 5 at the back, he was that right wing back who could go up and down the flank. So now playing in a back 4, he has more defensive responsibility. And I think honestly, based on the tactical context where he was constantly in a 2-1 situation, I think Doherty did pretty well, considering also his profile of more of an attacker than a defensive defender. I think he did pretty well, but yeah, he was just not favored by the tactical context of the game.
Yes, and this is a link that these are links that we are going to include in the show notes for further information. But if you want to have a good overview of what happened on that Arsenal left side and what led to the good chances that being created, there are two good bits that we can talk about. There was a nice Twitter thread by our own Joel Parker on what happened during the game. And also Jasmine Baba, who writes for Spielverlagerung, she also wrote a good article detailing some of those left side dynamics. And it's important because it wasn't a single mechanic, but it was several things and several, depending, for example, on where Arsenal had the ball, Spurs pressed a bit differently, and that led to different dynamics. So, for example, if Gabriel had the ball more on the if Arsenal had the ball more on the left side, what happened is that Bale started pressing a bit more against Gabriel on the left side. Then Tottenham's pivot was attracted to Xhaka, who was Arsenal's pivot on the left side. And then you had the situation where Tierney was basically free while Smith Rowe made a run behind Doherty. So this was always laid down in such a way that Arsenal kind of had a free man that they could take advantage of. Then you had other situations where, for example, if Arsenal had the ball more on their right side, what happened is that Smith Rowe could be completely free on the other side of the pitch. So, for example, David Luiz and Thomas Partey could just make a good diagonal ball all the way to the other side. And that was a good way to progress the ball and to keep moving forward. So, and again, it always ended up with one of Tierney or Smith Rowe being free, and it ended up with one of Tierney or Smith Rowe making a run behind Doherty.
In a tactics podcast, it's always hard without images and video, but I think you did a brilliant job. I can follow it, but I know that without images, it's always hard. So we will put it in the show notes as well, the stuff you talked about here and why Doherty was in trouble so much.
Mm-hmm. And something that we should mention is that Arsenal dominating more on their left side, I think it became more of a thing after Son had to leave the pitch with an injury.
Yeah, so you made that point for me. And if listeners hear something, they are working on my street just in front. So if you hear background noises, that's from people working on the street. Yeah, they are doing some piping. So excuse me if you hear anything about that. Yeah, you said Lamela came on after 18 minutes for Son. Big blow for Tottenham, their best counter-attacking player, and Lamela came on. Let's talk about Spurs for a bit in that first 20, 25 minutes, Jose. What did they do? Not much. Let me point out first that I think their squad selection was weird because they play in a deep block, defensively 4-4-2. Then, as I pointed out earlier, you have Reguilón on the left, who's more, you know that even better than me, but who's more of an attacking profile. I pointed it out for Doherty as well, more of an attacking fullback. Then you have a double pivot of Ndombele, who's not destroyer by all means. He's a creative, technical, central midfielder who can do very well in a possession-oriented system, but not in a role where he has to defend a lot. Højbjerg can play this role. I think he's better in the role he played at Southampton last season in a more pressing role. So he can do it, but he's not a defensive midfielder by any way. So awkward fullback selection, awkward double pivot. And then you have Lucas Moura in the center and Gareth Bale on the right, who are experienced players, but not counter-attacking monsters in this sense, right? They are good still, but they're not counter-attacking players. And then Harry Kane, I think, can play in any system. So I thought the squad selection to begin with was quite odd.
And at this point, it's not just the selection for this specific game. I think it's fair to say that the entire Tottenham squad is not a great fit for how Jose Mourinho likes to play football. And that's a problem because, yes, you have the fullbacks that are maybe a better fit for the fullbacks, the double pivot, even the wingers. They're probably a better fit for a pressing side than for a side that has to defend deep for a while.
But does this come down to what Mourinho said when he was appointed by Levi some time ago, that he said, okay, I changed my style, I'm now a more offensive coach? And do you think it has gone so far that they based their transfer strategy around that, even though Mourinho is still the same coach he was at Man U, at Chelsea, and at Real Madrid?
Well, with Mourinho, you never know, because you never know when he actually means things or when he is just lying. So, and by the way, this is not true just of Mourinho. This can be said of any coach. You don't know when they're actually lying because it's part of the strategy.
It's Zidane, right? Who never says anything.
Yeah, that's a good point. There are two styles when it comes to the coaches. Some might deliberately lie And then there are people like Zidane who just don't say anything.
It's hurting a little bit. We were talking about Spurs. I said they didn't do much in the first half. They had one shot in the first half, but they also had one goal in the first half. So, yeah, you talk about that, Rabona. I think everyone who saw the match obviously will remember it. I think the rest of the world saw it on their timeline, on their Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. What a goal that was.
Yes, and I like the sequence that led to it, by the way, because you had... So this came, we were talking about Bale being more of a playmaker now. That's exactly how it started. We had Bale doing a very nice, perfectly weighed diagonal ball from his right side all the way over to the left to Reguilón. The pass was so good that Reguilón can basically just square the ball to Lucas on the first touch. Lucas leaves it to Lamela, who does Lamela, does a Lamela. This guy does Rabonas with five times the frequency of a normal player. Sometimes, and sometimes they go off nicely like this one. Now, the question I have for you, Eric, is, because this is a debate we were having with Ohm, like, which one do you like better? This one or the one that he did from outside the box in Europa League?
I'll be honest with you. I think this one was better because of the occasion. So I think that was the Europa League group stage. It was better goal in itself, but this occasion was way bigger. So for that reason, I will go for this one. But purely from a footballing point of view, the other one was better because it was harder. It was farther away from goal. It was harder for the goalkeeper to get. So I have to go with this one, but the other one, if we only look at football.
Well, I also think that this one was a bit harder to pull off in the sense that there were more bodies in the box in front of him. So it required more precision to get it in. The other one had the difficulty that you, because it's outside the box, you had to give more power to the ball to do that, which is also not easy.
Yeah. Anyways, Tottenham in front, great goal. And I didn't mention that when Lamela came in, he played as the number 10 and Moura went over to the left to Sonny's place. Yeah, so first challenge goal is in, Tottenham 1-0 up. We did see Arsenal continuing how they created chances after the 1-0. I think they did just as good as before the goal. So the game state, I think, didn't change that much, which is a compliment for Arsenal, because often you see when a team concedes, they start to play worse, but they played on the same level. And it's funny to me, Jose, that again, they created their chances from the pattern we saw earlier, right?
Yes, they continue creating chances from the mechanism that we described before, which is mostly, yes, Smith Rowe and Tierney been super mobile on the left side. And again, sometimes one of them made the run, sometimes it was the other. There was a big warning. The first big warning shot kind of came in the 37th minute, where you had Smith Rowe making the run. He makes a cutback to the penalty spot that, like I said, another guy, they cannot get to there on time. And then right after, like, you get like this Cedric shot from outside the box that hits the post. That was the warning shot. 44th minute, then that's when we have the goal. Like, we have this situation where Tierney beats Doherty. He crosses to the penalty spot again. And then that one, Ødegaard does reach that one, goes into the goal. It's also interesting to see that in those situations, let's just say that Spurs pivots were in a complicated position because Ndombele had to be defending almost as a fifth defender because he was trying to follow Smith Rowe throughout this entire sequence. Then Højbjerg, because Spurs does not really defend that compactly, Spurs' midfield line is actually not great. When you are defending in a deep block, you have to defend not just that last line right next to your goal. You have to defend the penalty spot. Like, your midfield line has to be defending the penalty spot. But Spurs are not that compact when they defend in a deep block. And this was an example of that. Like, Højbjerg was a bit too far away, so he got there late to block that pass to Ødegaard in the penalty spot. So this is something that's an important bit of deep block defending. Don't forget the penalty spot. When a player makes a cross, it's very easy to forget the penalty spot.
Yeah, and you hear people talk about defensive awareness a lot, but it can be a bit of a, yeah, what do people mean with that? But Højbjerg not blocking the pass into Ødegaard, that's defensive awareness. He has to know that cross is there. And if you look back at that goal, Ødegaard doesn't even make a clever run or something. He was just in that spot and he got the ball and he finished it.
Yes, and it's interesting because I wasn't super keen on Ødegaard's game during the first half, but as I said at the beginning, if I look back at the numbers, it was better than what I thought. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Arteta is actually giving him a pretty meaningful role and is giving him the role that I think maximizes his impact, because Ødegaard is not just an eight. He is kind of a mix between eight and 10. So he's a player that you want not just producing shots and chances, you also want him helping you play out of the back. And Arteta has actually given him a role that allows him to do that, similar to how Real Sociedad did it back in Spain.
Jose, sorry to interrupt. I'll just go ahead and say, 1-1 at halftime. Talk a bit about Ødegaard if you want to. I know you have lots of interesting stuff to say, and I'd love to hear it. Just go for it. How was his role here?
Well, yeah. So now going into that, he's allowed kind of the freedom to, if Arsenal are playing from the back, he can drop to the right side of the two pivots. He can drop to the right of like Partey and Xhaka and just help play out of the back. Sometimes he even received the ball directly from the center back. So he, if you look at the players who had most impact for Arsenal moving into the final third, you have Partey, you have Tierney, then you have Ødegaard. But he was also the second player with most, Ødegaard was also the second player with most entries into the box for Arsenal, which, again, it's a good description of the things that Ødegaard does best. Like, he gets you to the final third, he helps you play out from the back, but he also helps you get into the box. And that's the best description of what this player can do. It seems like Arteta understands that he needs to give him a bit extra freedom to do that. And that works nicely for him. The disadvantage, and this is something that Jasmine Baba pointed out pretty nicely in her article, is that if you have him play in such a deep position, it's harder for him to attack the box. So that one late run that led to the goal, sure, that ended up in a goal, but for the most part, it was difficult for him to actually run into the box because he started from such deep positions. That was generally the problem with Arsenal in this game, in the sense that they played well as a team. They dominated territory. They dominated possession. They had a good mechanism to create chances, but they just did not have enough players in the box. And that's made worse by the fact that Lacazette also likes to play outside the box too. So they just did not have enough bodies in the box to really turn those crosses and passes into shots.
I always have a hard time typecasting Lacazette because maybe I just haven't watched enough of him, but he's not a traditional number nine, but he's also not like a Benzema kind of number nine. I find it hard to put him in a kind of profile. Anyways, yeah, second half starts. Quite surprising for me, Jose. One substitution I find surprising was that Saka was taken out and Pepe was brought in.
Yeah, Pepe at some point, especially when he was playing in France, looked like a more aggressive player without the ball. But here at Arsenal, at least to me, he's been more of a ball to the feet kind of player rather than an aggressive player. And that's noticeable when Arsenal plays, because one of the important things that Saka brings to this side is that when everyone else has the ball, he's the one who's moving well but without the ball. So when they don't have that, the team notices it, because then you don't have enough people making those kinds of runs. So I did feel that it made them a bit worse. Generally, though, the second half did not start well, because I was looking at the numbers, and there is literally zero open play shots in the first 25 minutes of the second half.
Yeah, that was a bit boring, actually. And I didn't understand that substitution at all. Maybe fitness, maybe injury, I don't know. But Saka, to me, was not doing bad in the first half. So that was awkward to me. And to be honest, you said zero open play shots in the first 25 minutes. I thought Mourinho made stuff worse with his substitutions again, because after an hour or so, he made two substitutions, brought on Sissoko for Bale, and then 5 minutes later brought on Dele Alli for Ndombele. And as you pointed out to me, takes off his two maybe best passers that can control the game from their qualities. Yeah, how do you take control back? Like, what's his incentive here? Does he want to defend the point? Does he rotate to keep people happy? Because from a football perspective, I didn't understand that that double substitution around the hour mark at all.
Well, and also, it's Mourinho. This is not a coach who really believes in controlling games with the ball. So, of course, it's not a change that I like as someone who likes defensive possession a bit more, but Mourinho doesn't believe in that. And this is a discussion we've had with Ohm too a lot, which is the big problem with Mourinho as a defensive coach in 2021 is that if you want to defend well, you also should, especially when you're a team with Tottenham's talent, you should also do defensive possession. But Mourinho is so scared of his teams having possession that they don't keep the ball at all. So it's hard to be a great defensive team in 2021 if you don't have at least some kind of defensive possession.
Yeah, and you mentioned Ohm all the time, former Between the Posts writer. Get him back on the team, then you can talk about him all the time.
I guess because we also have a lot of overlap with what we do in Managing Madrid. Well, yeah, we're always discussing about matches and cursing about matches too.
And he likes to talk anyway. After 62 minutes, we get the moment that decides the game. We get a penalty. I do think that was one of the better moments of Pepe. So all in all, as you said earlier, he's now more of a guy who plays in the ball and then distributes from there. Talk a bit about Lacazette versus Davinson Sanchez. What tells it about Davinson? What tells it about Lacazette?
Yeah, that I found it to be kind of a funny play because, well, brilliant pass from Pepe. Then the current state of Lacazette is that he actually didn't control the ball as well. Like it gave off a big bounce off his foot and he missed the shot that came afterwards. So like that would have been, if there had been no tackle from Davinson Sanchez, we would have kind of laughed at that miss. But what happened is that he missed the control in the shot, but Davinson Sanchez didn't miss his tackle, which probably he kind of overcommitted that leg, to put it that way, and just went right there. And even though Lacazette missed the shot, Sanchez's foot still went into Lacazette, and that's a penalty. So it's, which honestly, to me, it's like classic Davinson Sanchez in the sense that I don't think, for example, that Sanchez is a great defender for deep block teams, going back into another round of profiles that are not a great fit for Mourinho teams.
Yeah, I think defensively he's not good enough to be a Premier League top four club defender. And he's also very limited on the ball. So former Ajax player, like him a lot, he was very good here in Eredivisie. But overall, I don't think he deserves a spot in a team that wants to compete for Premier League top four. Lacazette does score the penalty, so that's good for him. 2-1 up. Then afterwards, yeah, we can say Spurs basically killed their own game. Especially Lamela was responsible for that. Because he had a really Lamela kind of game, right? Because we know him for being an attacker that is fierce. He does nasty stuff sometimes, but also brilliant stuff sometimes. And I'm certainly not the first one to point this out, but this game was the Eric Lamela special because one Rabona goal, also two yellow cards.
And that's the thing, like two yellow cards in 7 minutes. The second one with like one of those kind of stupid, like you put your arm behind you to like block off someone who's defending you. If you are thinking about that yellow card you just got, then you don't put your arm that high up like that you get to touch someone's face because that's just asking for a second yellow.
Yeah, you know, I don't particularly think he got many red cards. I looked into it, but it's not like a pattern for him. But we know that Lamela is capable of doing nasty stuff, as I said earlier. And this game got very weird after that because now Spurs, chasing the match with a man down, basically played their most productive football of the match.
Yes, and another thing that I want to say before we dive into those last 20 minutes is that I do think the Sissoko change, even though it did not make them Spurs better with the ball, Spurs kind of changed to something more like 4-3-3 looking with them. So they kind of restructured midfield in such a way that you had like Højbjerg more as a number 6, and then Ali and Sissoko more as like number 8s. And a lot of the time then Spurs were defending in more of a 4-5-1. And I felt that that gave them a bit better coverage of those wide areas, and it did not, and it was better at preventing that 2-1 from Tierney and Smith Rowe on Doherty. So that's the one thing that, and again, that sounds like a very Mourinho change. So you sacrifice whatever little passing and passing you had in your team, you sacrifice it to fix a defensive issue. It's like a Mourinho brand change. Yeah.
But we are both not Arsenal or Tottenham fans. But for us as neutrals, the last 20 minutes were good, at least from my perspective. They had open play stuff and end-to-end stuff, obviously forced by the red card from Spurs. But still, I enjoyed the last 20 minutes.
Yes, I was watching them back and it wasn't like a show of like patterns or things from Spurs. It was mostly them being really determined and then moving. For example, you had like a lot of Toby long balls going forward. A lot of the time, maybe Arsenal players, I also felt that for like from an emotional perspective, like Arsenal players got a bit scared by that and they were sometimes making like unnecessary fouls. I think one of them, like there was a situation where an Arsenal player makes a foul like in Tottenham on the Tottenham half. Okay, then they send the long ball all the way to the other side. And then an Arsenal player commits another foul now close to their box, which is a summary of how that end to the game was for Arsenal. Like it was a bit shaky in that regard. They also looked a bit shakier when trying to play out from the back. Mm-hmm. And they also, at that point, didn't have the legs to do the counter-pressing they were doing in the first half. So it was just harder for Arsenal to have any control over the game. And that combined with the fact that, yes, Spurs kind of woke up a bit and, for example, started pressing a bit more. It would be nice if they pressed a bit more frequently.
And surprisingly, Jose, Arsenal in this time of the game really relied on David Luiz being solid defensively and Gabriel Magalhães, who had a very good game defensively. So that's surprisingly as well, right?
Well, I think Gabriel has been pretty good. I just have a bit less trust on David Luiz. But I think considering the circumstances they were in, I think they handled it well because the rest of the team looked a bit shaky, but they did not look shaky. So I think that was kind of important to defend Arsenal's box. Even then, there was still a bit of fear whenever Spurs made it into the box. And a lot of that fear happens when you have one of the best center forwards on the planet, which is Harry Kane. Because a lot of that drive at the end, a lot of it is just Harry Kane having that kind of personality and being very determined. And of course, the biggest chances kind of came from that. Like his header that was overruled by offside and then the free kick that hit the post. So yeah, it's Harry Kane being Harry Kane and being still one of the best strikers in the planet.
Yeah, and I think they came close with an overruled goal from offside and some set piece stuff, but in the end, too little, too late, and Arsenal win it. Have you got anything to add to that little conclusion for me?
I mean, I think they deservedly win it because we're talking about a game where Arsenal had like 13 shots and Spurs had 6, something like that, and they woke up until the very end. And then, of course, Arsenal had the better chances. They were the ones making shots from the penalty spot from open play, as it happened in the first half. So they were the better team, and to me, they earned the win. So that's kind of the thing for Arsenal. And I think there is a lot of potential in what Arsenal are doing. I really think they are Arteta has got them playing pretty well collectively, but the team needs to be more efficient in the boxes. And that's the tricky bit of how do you do that? Like, will it require new signings over the summer because your strikers are declining? Will it require players like Saka, Odegaard, or Smith Rowe to have more aggressive roles going into the box? We will see what Arteta decides to do.
Yeah, let's talk about Spurs for a bit. We saw at Chelsea what a change in manager can do. And I'm not saying it always is going well because there's always circumstances. It's not always only the manager. For example, if you look at Pochettino, who I think we rate both very high, having a hard time at Paris Saint-Germain now. But if Tuchel would have taken over this Tottenham side, we know the pressing would be better. We know the positional play would be better. They would be in a better state. I think Tottenham would do so well to just admit, okay, we made a mistake. It's going to be expensive. It's hard time financially, but we need to get a manager that can get us into top 4. And the only relevant question, if you sack your manager, is can we get a better one? I'm quite sure Tottenham could get a better manager with the squad they have now, could get more points out of it. And they want to compete for top four, but they're not even into the top six discussion for now. So I think if you look at it calmly, analyze it objectively, there's only one way forward. That's to get rid of the guy. Sorry for the harsh analysis.
Yeah, and here's the thing, like, to the listeners, like, our problem is not that, say, Mourinho plays defensive football. It's that it's just, it's bad football that doesn't fit the players that he have. And yes, this is not just his fault. Like, this is also the fault of the people who appointed him, because why do you appoint a manager that plays one way when you have a squad that's a better fit to play another way? So there is a mismatch there that needs to be resolved in some way. Either the manager adapts to the players at hand, or, you know, the people who run the club adapt the manager to the squad that they have. But that mismatch needs to be resolved somehow. If Spurs, because Spurs have the potential to be a top four side, but with this mismatch between coach and tactics and between coach and squad, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, and I'll repeat it because you said it so well. The problem is not the defensive football from Mourinho. The problem is the bad football from this Mourinho team. And I think that's a good way to end it all. I'm sorry if you're a Mourinho fan that we are sometimes so negative about him, but it's just our opinion. Sorry, I'm not going to say it differently. I know every time we do Mourinho team podcast, so every time we do Tottenham, basically, we end on this point, but it is how we think about it. So sorry for being negative, but it's just our opinion.
Well, it's not just that. It's also, I'm not sorry. I'm not even sorry about that, because they're not even great at defending. Like, that's the thing. This is a defensive team that's not even great at defending, as we saw from, like, the issues defending the penalty spot. So it's not even like the sacrifices are worth it. Like, it's not, yeah.
No, but I can imagine if you are a Tottenham fan or a Mourinho fan, and every time you listen to us, we end with, yeah, Mourinho has to go. That's not, it can get a bit repetitive. So sorry for that. You don't say sorry perfectly for me. I don't care.
And also, it's important that, to me, it's not so much about managers or players being bad. It's about fit between players and manager.
Right. I think we made our point clear. Arsenal take a deserved 3 points. I'm anxious to see what happens with Oba, because he didn't play at all. He was late, but he didn't came on at all. Maybe something to look into. And I think both these clubs will end outside of the top six. So that's not good.
Yep, that's not good. Although, to be honest, it is kind of fun that the English top six is being rearranged right now.
Yeah, and that's definitely something to keep an eye on. For now, I'd like to thank the listener. We'll be back next week. Obviously, no reviews on iTunes. We need those. So if you have an iPhone or an iMac or a MacBook, please leave a review. There's also a written match report on this match on our website, betweentheposts.net, where we post all kinds of tactical analysis of all kinds of matches. Jose, thank you for being with me, and we will be back next week.
Oh, you said Jose. Like, I feel like Jose Mourinho now. So thanks for having me, Eric, and thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.